welcome to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. I am James Kay, and with me on the line, as always, is Chris Pennett. Chris, our streak of having awesome guests on the show just continues on today. I am so excited to have our next guest on. Maggie Hendricks is with us. Maggie, I don't even know how to introduce you because of, like, you've done so much with your career. I mean, you've got, like, you were, what, with USA Today, Yahoo Sports, you're with The Athletic right now. Actually, in The Score, too, you and Julie had a great radio show. I mean, I don't even know where to start with this, but otherwise, I just have to say thank you so much for giving us your time today.
CCL grad, Maggie Hendricks.
Yeah, CCL grad, go Fenwick. Chicago Catholic League, for those who don't know. And for those who don't know, that's sad for you. I don't know. I just go with sports writer. I figure that covers all the bases. But then, like, sometimes I write for StarTrek.com too. So I just write. I like writing. And I like talking to people. So that is my job.
Well, again, we're so thrilled that you're joining us to talk with us about the sky. I mean, we have so much to discuss today. But before we do that, I just want to say at the top of this, make sure to subscribe to the Windsider Podcast Network and our show, and you can find both of those on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We would appreciate a rate and review if you appreciate the show, and if not, please steer clear. We don't want your negative feedback.
I'll take the negative feedback. I'm a sponge here.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, send it to Chris. I can't handle it, clearly.
Tweet it to you, but don't ever put it in the actual reviews.
Yeah. Oh yeah, just don't make it public. That's all we really care about. But Maggie, we are a few days removed from Media Day, and I don't know about you guys, but one of the biggest takeaways I had from it was just how relaxed this team is, and they just seem really ready to go after a couple weeks of training camp. And you covered the team all of last season, and we talked a little bit about this before the show, but you had a chance to talk with James Wade and Steph Dolson on the phone recently. You know, I don't want to force you to open your reporter's pad too much, but what are your impressions of where this team is at right now and where they rank amongst other teams in the WNBA?
Well, I think the really great thing that they have going for them, and, you know, Stephanie mentioned this today, James mentioned this yesterday, that their core is coming back. There are a few additions, a few subtractions, but for the most part, this is a very close team. And they are already, they already have that bond. I feel bad for the teams that did all kinds of changes in the offseason because they didn't have that same kind of training camp time to really get to know each other. So I really think the teams with a strong veteran presence, which the Sky have, are really the teams that are going to make some noise this season.
Where do you see them, like, if you had to give a rank to them right now, just based on what you just said too, I mean, where would you put them?
I think I would put them around three or four, but the funny thing is like, I'm saying this, but all we've seen so far out of the entire WNBA is like clips from practice, clips, you know, and what they have to say. Because of so many players opting out, plus injuries, plus this very weird wobble situation, I honestly feel like it could be one of those crazy seasons where the Liberty could come out of nowhere and end up in the finals. Or it could be a crazy season where it's the absolute most experienced teams. So it seems like Seattle and Chicago and Phoenix will do really well. But it's one of the reasons I'm so excited about this season is because I really don't know what to expect.
I think those are the best kinds of seasons where like last season, a lot of people had this guy around like the 7-8 range, kind of a fringe playoff team. And then they just come out of nowhere and they end up achieving or just like surpassing like modest preseason expectations. And again, like I think that a team like even like the Indiana Fever, I think are really interesting. Something that Ari Chambers also mentioned when we had her on the pod too, was just that I kind of thought was interesting was that the Phoenix Mercury are apparently looking great right now, and a lot of people have them at the top as well. But, you know, I don't think they were necessarily a given that they were going to be healthy and ready to go this year. But apparently, like Ari's reporting, that the Mercury are looking great. Like all the teams that have question marks are kind of figuring things out a little bit right now. Chris, did you have any takeaways from Media Day that that stuck with you, you know, now that we're a couple days removed from it?
Well, like we talked about in the pre-show, it seems like the players are a bit more comfortable. I think the thing that really stuck out to me, and I want to get your opinion on this, Maggie, Diamond really looks like she's coming into her own in terms of just kind of filling her own. She feels comfortable in her own skin. Part of that, I think, is the distance that we as the media have from the team and the players. They might be in this wobble for all its faults, but they are in that. They have a membrane between them and the outside world, which is going to give them some more comfort being around each other more often. But I remember last year on Media Row, I think one game where Tony Gill sat in, you were singing Diamond's praises as we all have been. Yeah. But I'd been more of a skeptic up to this point. So what are you looking forward to seeing Diamond do this year? Do you think this is the year that she breaks out and really fills that superstar role?
I think she absolutely can. She played a little bit of overseas ball, but then came back with a little bit of an injury, but then the pandemic hit and everything. So she had time to just get completely healed and healthy and ready to go for the season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's all she's been doing. She's been so locked in on being one of Chicago's best athletes. I mean, she bought a place here. She is so locked in on it. And has been putting in the work. So I really think this could be a season that Diamond goes from being an all-star to like one of the top five players in the league, discuss it in MVP. My biggest concern with Diamond, and I think we even discussed this that day when we were on press row, she plays so much of her game in the air that I worry about the gravity and how she comes down. Because a lot of times when she comes down, she hits the ground hard. And she always pops back up. I think there were probably 10 times that Maddie Kenny and I like grabbed each other because we were worried about Diamond popping back up, but she does. She always pops back up. But this is now going into her third season. You know, the physicality of the game isn't ever going to stop. So I think if she can mature to figure out how to have the greatness of her game, but not always be up in the air, and make sure she's guarding herself against injury, then I think she's going to be unstoppable.
With the team in the position that the Sky are in right now, where they were a surprise last year, and I think everybody on the team understands that there's no surprises this time around, even with the situation that we're in where nothing is really guaranteed. Do you think that how historically when you see teams like this coming into that second year or maybe the third year where the expectations are fully on them, even with their experience, what have you seen from teams? How have they responded that are similar to this guy, if you can think of any in particular? And how do you expect this team to respond to the pressure given, again, the situation that we're in with COVID-19?
I think there are two things that control a team's reaction to that situation of like, hey, nobody knew who you were, but now we do. Now we're paying attention to you. I think your veteran presence decides some of that, and then also your coaches. And one thing James Wade did really well was keep the players on a fairly even keel last season. So even when they had a terrible game, even when things went crazy, even when he himself was not on an even keel, the players, they did a good job usually responding after a bad loss. Or even I say after that bad road trip early in the season when they went out to California and Las Vegas. So both, I think it's going to be really important for Courtney Vandersloot and Allie Quigley to continue to be leaders on this team. Stephanie Dolson too. Not having Jantel Lavender there in the bubble with them as she misses this season because she needed to have foot surgery. It's not great because she is one of those voices that she's won a championship. She was able to keep them very focused on the goal, even when she was injured, even when she was calling games for WCIU, she was still keeping her team focused. And so not having her there isn't great, but I also think you'll see people like Stephanie, Sydney Colson, whenever she can get to the wobble, I think that their presence is going to be important. And also now you have players like Gabby and Diamond who have been through a little bit more, who are a little bit more seasoned.
James, I just realized something that we hadn't brought up, and this will be interesting to think about. What, both of you, all of us, what do you think that the Sky lose, if anything, without having Bridget Pettis on the bench this season?
Wow, that's such a big question. I mean, going back to continuity, like that's the running theme of like the last four pods that we've done, is just the Sky are bringing back, like, again, the narrative that we've heard over and over again is that they're running it back. And I think that does also extend to the coaching staff. I mean, not having her, I think, is going to be difficult for the Sky a little bit, just because, again, having those familiar faces, I think, is just so important, especially in unprecedented circumstances like this. I didn't do too much of a deep dive into like that situation. And now, like, I wasn't sure even if Maggie, have you heard anything about that? I mean, or just talking with Wade and like Steph about that situation, if you had a chance to do so?
No, I haven't. But I do think that, I mean, both the assistant coaches are different. It's not even just Bridget, though I think they're going to miss Bridget a lot. But also Carla Morrow headed to Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right. Thank you.
So, that's going to be a change. Now, one of the coaches that they brought in is the coach of UMMC Ekaterinburg. So Ellie and Courtney already know him very well. And so that, you know, that gives him some credibility. He's already known well around the league. He's the husband of the coach of the Phoenix Sun, because the WNBA, if nothing, is always messy. But I read today, by the way, that they are not staying together in the wobble.
What?
No, to keep it professional.
I like that. No, I like that.
I'm just kind of aghast at that. Like, I mean, it makes sense. I would understand why you would want to do that and keep things professional, but also that's like 2 months. And like, your wife's right there. But you're not staying.
I'm not married, so I don't totally get it, but it reminds me of how the Lopez twins said they don't talk during the season.
Yeah, but there is a key component.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Are we getting messy now?
Bubble as my husband. That's all I'm saying. All right.
That is so funny. I can't believe I missed that today. That, oh my God. I don't even know how I would even navigate that situation personally. Like, do you FaceTime and like just like being in the same location, but you can't physically see each other?
Dinner together, maybe, but they're like not staying in the same. I don't know. I don't get. But also, I don't think I could live in a situation where my husband's job was literally on the other side of the world. And you know, I mean, that whole like, but I mean, like James Wade and Edwiga do it too. Edwiga and Jet are still in France. Right. While you're doing the bubble. So, I mean, the WNBA has, you know, there are always a lot of sacrifices that are asked, not just of the coaches, but of the coaches' family, and the players and everything. So, yeah.
I don't go through WNBA Instagram, like, daily, like, in the way that I do it on Twitter. But I also haven't seen any videos of crossover of teams that are seeing each other in the bubble. Like, all of the videos I see are the Sky are together, or the Storm are together, or the Sparks are together. But I haven't really seen too much of, you know, like Stewie and Candace Parker sitting down, like having a meal together or something. You know what I mean? Have you guys seen anything like that?
I did see a video today, just a short video that the Sky dropped that was, I think, them scrimmaging against Phoenix, I want to say.
Okay. Yeah, they did. There was one. I saw two pictures of Sky players with other teams. There was like a little Oregon rookies get together. So it was like Ruthie and Sachi Sabli and Sabrina Ionescu. And then there was a couple UConn girls that got together. So it was Z and a couple other people. So, I mean, that's the other thing about it. When you only have 144 players, so many of them went to UConn or Notre Dame or Tennessee. They all have these bonds that already exist. So I think that makes this whole bubble situation easier when you already have friends who are not even just your teammates and your coworkers, but also, like, you know, your best friend from college. Like, Nafisa Collier and Gabby Williams and Katie Lou Samuelson are all on three different teams, but they were super close in college. So I'm going to bet they hung out. They've hung out, you know?
Oh, definitely. And I'm sure there's a lot of that happening behind the scenes too, that's not happening in front of a camera, which would make a ton of sense. But wait, we got to talk a little bit about a former UConn player in Azrae Stevens, Maggie. I mean, I feel like every time I see a video that this guy posts, it's Azrae Stevens like slashing and scoring at the rim with ease. And I don't know about you guys, but on media day, Wade said that he thinks that she's, I think he said that she's like pretty much all the way back to being healthy. She said that she's still dealing with daily soreness in that foot, but that she feels comfortable and that she usually feels fine the next day. Maggie, where do you see Azrae fitting in right now? Do you see her taking over Jantel Lavender's minutes from last season at the four? Or do you see kind of what we saw a little bit from last season too, when Jantel went down, where we saw Stu take over a lot of those minutes, but that James Wade did work in different lineups to make up for that loss?
I think Z is going to end up taking Jantel's spot. It would have been great to see them get to just play off of each other and give each other breaks, but I think we're going to see it. And don't forget that Z is taller. Z is the new tallest member of the team. Stephanie confirmed that today. So Z is going to offer some height, a little bit more height than Jantel had, which is going to be important. I think when you're facing teams like Phoenix, when you have Brittany Griner coming at you, that kind of having two people of that size in the paint, I think it's going to be really important for that, this guy. And then, you know, there haven't been so many changes to the team, but there's been enough that I think there's going to be a whole lot of things that we're going to see Z. I believe we'll see Z start and then in compliment Stephanie, but then we'll get to see, you know, how creative changes, what the lineup changes will be throughout.
So James Wade said that he wants to have more set lineups this season than he did last year. I think that was one of the big things from media day as well, was just that it's not going to be like last year because he has a year under his belt and he's had more time to work with this team. Do you feel like Azrae, like kind of finding her groove, getting back to being healthy and like, you know, just feeling comfortable underneath herself, like where to the point where maybe that Diamond doesn't quite need to put it all together this season. Like, let's just say that that doesn't happen. And I really hope it does for this team's sake, but do you envision a scenario where Azrae could be like a 14, 15 point per game scorer, and like she kind of takes off some of the pressure that Diamond might have?
I mean, that would 14, 15 a game would be a lot.
Yeah.
I think averaging, if, like looking for her to average say 10 points and 6 or 7 rebounds a game, I think that would be an ideal for her. And making sure she's also setting up other people to score, you know, as Jantel did so well so many times last season. So, I think that would be an exciting thing, because honestly, I really think the best way for Diamond to be the big star that we want her to be is to make sure that if her teammates are all playing at their best, that's usually what elevates Diamond.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there's a situation where, you know, Courtney is just dishing everything out and Allie's hitting the threes, then sometimes Diamond doesn't feel as much pressure and then can just, you know, just keeps going and does all the crazy Diamond things she can do.
Yeah, we talked with R.E. Schwartz the other day, and he was saying that we did this over-under segment where it was like, do you have Azrae averaging more than 12 points per game? Like, would you take the over or under on that? And he thinks she is going to go beyond that. He didn't give an exact number, but it did feel a little bit high. But I do think that's what, like, his confidence in her in that sense, I think does say something a little bit about her upside for this team that, you know, I think that we didn't talk about it enough heading into the offseason. I know Erica Nemchuk is someone who was very high on Azrae Stevens when it was first reported that she was traded to this guy. But I think that she's weird. Like, I don't know if she's the X factor, because Diamond is definitely in, like, she's definitely the X factor because she has the potential to be one of the, like, a top five player in this league. But Azrae, I really think this guy, you're going to lean on her a little bit more than I think we probably anticipated before the start of training camp. But just to keep this moving a little bit too, Chris and I didn't get a chance to discuss when we talked with REA, you know, James Wade's piece in the Players Tribune. And for those of who missed it, definitely read it. But James Wade kind of just went over his experience with racism. And even at the top of the article, discussed a recent instance where a white passenger and a flight attendant called him aggressive and kind of told him to like sit down in his seat, even though like other passengers were standing up doing the same thing he was. I mean, I thought it was such a powerful piece. I mean, Maggie, throughout your career, you've been someone who has always pushed for social justice to be in the conversation with sports talk. I mean, what did you take away from this piece and like, you know, just like your reaction with how it resonated with people? Because it spread a lot through social media.
Yeah. You know, the thing that really stuck out for me is that this white passenger, this white woman said to James, "You're just not global."
That was wild, right?
Whose French wife is living in France and whose other job is in Russia. But yeah, he's not global. I mentioned this to James. I said as soon as I read that, I wanted to throttle this woman.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't alone, you know? He's like, the rest of the team was pissed, but, you know, I knew I had to keep calm for them. But I mean, it angered me, but it also, the sadder part is that it didn't surprise me that, I mean, that like, there is not a situation a black person can walk into and not have white people question if they belong there. And it just, and so that's why it has to be connected to sports, because there are no black athletes who stop being black when they walk out onto the field. So if we are going, if we're going to cheer them on and we're going to want them to do all the amazing things that we've seen black athletes do, then we also have to listen to their stories like James told and listen to all the bullshit that they deal with because racist people and because of systemic racism. And we either need to dismantle it, or I don't know what the other option is. We have to dismantle it. That's honestly the only way to do it. And you can't separate it from sports, because sports are a part of society. And if we want teams that actually display who we are as a people and a country, then we want our athletes and our coaches talking about this stuff.
In that same vein, Maggie, I mean, that article was really personal for me, and I sent Coach a message about it, because pretty much everything in there resonated with an experience that I've had 5 or 6 times over. And I've been wondering, as this goes on, as civil rights uprisings have sprung up all over the country and around the world, and as we've gone through this pandemic, I've wondered if, and I've asked multiple people on this that we've had on the show and off, if there's a way for sports to bring back sports and not distract in some way from the message that the players and the coaches and everybody's trying to get out. Pretty much all the players I've seen in both basketball leagues have made it very clear that they want to keep this at the forefront. And obviously the WNBA is trying to keep that message at the forefront with the names on the players' jerseys of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, Tony McDade, all of the people who aren't here anymore because of this, and then putting Black Lives Matter on the court. But I worry and I fear that it's going to get lost in the usual statistics and wins and losses that we look for in sports. Do you see that happening, or do you think that this is going to be different just because of the push that the personnel is giving it?
I think honestly, the athletes, especially like the younger athletes that are like under 30, are doing such a good job of making sure that this message doesn't get lost. I'm forgetting the name of the NBA player. I think he's with the Sixers yesterday.
Tobias Harris, yeah.
Yes. He answered every single question with, "Breonna Taylor's killers must be arrested." So I'm so inspired by how these athletes are, even though, you know, they're out there doing everything that they want to do to be great basketball players and earn money and do all of the things that they want to do, they're still very focused on what is happening outside of the bubble. So what my hope is that the athletes will continue to call attention to this. And I think that'll happen because remember, WNBA players were the first ones to really, I mean, outside of Colin Kaepernick, of course, but were the first ones to stand up and wear shirts demanding justice and saying, I can't breathe. And obviously what Maya Moore has done, and that there are players like Tasha Cloud who are missing an entire season so that they can focus on the work that needs to be done in their community. So I have faith that even as it will be so, feel so good to just watch a basketball game, that the message won't get lost because these players are too focused on making sure it's a message we're all hearing all the time.
And we have to give credit to the Sky for what they're doing this season. Gabby Williams told us a little bit about what they're going to do in this regard outside of the WNBA's plans in, you know, having Black Lives Matter on the court and players like Sydney Colson, who are going to have Breonna Taylor's name like stitched underneath their number. So Gabby was telling us that the Sky are going to have this, they teamed up with, I think the name of the organization is called By the Hand, and they are going to working on this initiative called Sky for Change. And I think they're going to donate $10 for every point scored and $100 for every win this season, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to have to go back and look at the article I wrote for Winsider because I detailed it there. But
no, you got it right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is amazing. And that's really I haven't really seen other teams that have had plans like this. Maybe they just haven't announced it, not at the WNBA level, but just other professional sports teams that talk the talk, but don't necessarily walk the walk, you know? And I think that's something I've been pretty frustrated with when I see these teams that talk about diversity and it just feels so hollow when it's not actually backed up with action. So yeah, I tip my hat to the Sky because what they're doing there is incredible. And I look forward to hearing about Sky for Change later down the road because I think each player is going to have an organization that they're going to be trying to like raise money for. And I mean, that says it all, just like where this team, this team really trying to push for social change in a time when we really need it.
Yeah, but I think so. It's something that's also important to point out. And I've tried to do this on social media, but I don't know if my message always gets across. The Sky also walk the walk in their hiring. Mm-hmm. They obviously, James Wade is a Black man. They have the vice president of marketing and communications is a Black woman. They have diverse voices at high levels. It's not just about tokenism by any stretch. They have a staff that reflects Chicago, in my opinion. And I think that is wonderful because then when you're at the games, the way things are programmed, what groups are brought in, it really does reflect Chicago, who's singing the national anthem, all of these things. And so it doesn't surprise me to see that would continue, even though they're not playing in Chicago, that they would continue to figure out a way to give back to the things that are important to them because it's a diverse organization to the top.
Yeah, definitely.
One thing on that, Maggie, sorry, James, yeah, I was thinking, do you expect to see the Sky make any sort of silent or vocal protests like we've seen from other teams as their seasons start here? I know specifically with, I think it was the Giants and the A's knelt during the national anthem. Do you expect to see anything like that as we start the season?
I haven't spoken to any players specifically about this, but again, they have been so committed to it that I wouldn't be surprised at all to see either players kneeling or, you know, them locked in arms or something like that. I haven't heard anything specific that it will happen, but it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, that is something that I wanted to ask on media day, but I didn't want to put anyone in a position where they hadn't made up their mind about it yet, that I didn't want to force them to answer that. But
and it's hard to ask that at a media day when you're everybody else. Like I get that. That is a weird one.
I mean, James could say, I asked Stephanie Dolson what she felt like her place was in the world at large. So you can ask if there's going to be a protest.
Oh, my God. It's so funny how, like, you can feel sometimes, like, when, like I had a couple of dumb questions at Media Day. I'm not even going to lie. It's just so in that format, it's just so uncomfortable. And
I've been doing press conferences for more than a decade. I've probably done like at least 100 press conferences, and they still make me nervous. And I still have to like write down every single question, because if I don't, it'll fall out of my mouth funny. And I will tell you, James Wade has given me more than enough looks at press conferences that have made me feel really dumb. So I don't, and they might not have even been for me, but I felt dumb enough. So yeah, that feeling doesn't go away, unfortunately. Sorry.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I asked Courtney Vandersloot, you know, I had prepared a question for her specifically the night before, because we hadn't gotten confirmation about when the media day was until like the day of. And I think I got it like 20 minutes before it started. I'm like, oh, okay, I got to, you know, hurry and get this all together. But I had one question for Courtney where I was like talking to her about, you know, her and Allie Quigley, I believe, are the only two players left on that 2014 Sky Finals team. And I had this, you know, this question prepared where I had context about the season when they were a 500 team. But despite that, like, what can you get, like, tell the team about, like, you know, even saying it now, it seems dumb, but like, what advice can you give the other players on the team who haven't had that experience? Like what it takes to get there. And I cut off the context because I was so like worked up in the moment. And she like spelled it out for me why that question was stupid without the context pretty much. And I'm like, I am just going to shut up the rest of the media section session. But let's keep this rolling a little bit. So I don't know if you guys saw this on Twitter yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, but NBC Sports, they kind of pissed me off when they tweeted out a graphic of all men's Chicago sports teams. And I think they posed the question, like, what athlete do you think of when you see these logos, which was kind of shitty since it didn't include any Chicago women's sports teams. So I felt that we needed to kind of make up for their gaffe for this. And I pitched to you guys that we rank the Chicago sports teams and, you know, see where we come to. I'm really interested to see your answers because trying to prepare for this, I felt was really difficult. So just so we're on the same page, are we leaving off the college teams? Because they, I mean, there's so
that,
many.
That would be hard.
Yeah.
They're a bit much.
Good. I didn't prepare for that. So I'm glad that we're on the same page there. So, God, it's really like I don't know too much about soccer or hockey, to be honest with you. Never really got into hockey, but I think we can kind of piece this together. Maggie, do you want to just go 1 through 4 really quickly, and then we can each do the other ones like after each other? I'm curious to see where you have like 1 through 4 for the teams at the top here.
So are we saying like the teams that we think have like what's our criteria here?
I just say, like, as it stands right now, based on where these teams are heading in their respective sports season this year, where would you rank them? Is that doable?
Yes, absolutely. I think, I honestly, for the team that I think is closest to a championship, I do believe it's the Sky. So I am going to put the Sky at number one. I will put the White Sox behind them at number two. I think this White Sox team is going to be a beast this season. Number three, I'll put the Cubs because they could be a beast this season, or they could be terrible. And then number four, definitely not the Bulls. I'm going to put the Red Stars.
Yeah.
So that, you know, their season hasn't been going quite as well as they want, but I think they've been doing a little bit better. I don't know when the Bandits are going to play again, the softball team. So because the fast pitch season has been a little weird, but so that's it. Sky, Sox, Cubs, Red Stars.
I love it. How about you, Chris? Do you have 1 through 4 in mind?
My top two are the same as Maggie. The Sky are in the position to compete for a championship, and the White Sox have some things to prove, but these two exhibition games against the Cubs have definitely shown me that their offense at the very least is way better. Ooh. And their defense looks pretty sound. So as cautious as I always am as a White Sox fan, I think that they could go very far in the playoffs. I mean, make the playoffs, first of all.
Yeah.
And then make a run in the playoffs. And the Sky, I expect nothing less than at least a semifinals appearance. I'm biased. I'm hugely biased. We root for the Go-Go White Sox and whoever plays the Cubs person. That said, I understand how good the Cubs have been in the last 5 years, notwithstanding last season's collapse. But I just see them on the downswing. I like you, Darvish, but let's not spend so much time on baseball on a basketball podcast. I don't think the Cubs are top four. I put the Red Stars in that slot only because they made the NWSL finals last mm-hmm. year. And even though it's been an up and down Challenge Cup, they're in the semifinals tomorrow night. Shameless plug. Watch the Red Stars versus the Sky Blue tomorrow night. Ari Chambers, we know you're watching the Sky Blue and you're going to be disappointed. So I put the Red Stars number three. And then, boy, it's difficult after that because I am horribly underinformed on the Bandits. I know that they have been good for most of the past decade. But like you said, Maggie, I don't know if they're going to play this season. The Bulls are still a mess to me. And I'm not even a football fan anymore, so I think the Bears are just kind of spinning their wheels at this point. They need a management change. So, oh man, if the women's rugby team, the former Red Stars, was pro, I would put them up in number four. But I can't say. I have a who wants to fill the slot at number four.
All right,
that's totally fair. I mean, I also have the Sky at number one right now, just because. I mean, they are. Like out of all the Chicago sports teams right now, they are in the best position to win the finals this season, as difficult as it's going to be with some of these other teams at the top of the WNBA. The one thing I want to mention, too, I do think this team is at its highest point in its franchise history. Like, I know they're in Florida right now, but, you know, if they were to play out this season, I mean, since they moved to Wintrust, like, from Allstate Arena, I mean, they are a legit Chicago team now, and they separated themselves from the suburbs, which I think isn't talked about enough for, like, I guess in terms of last year's narratives. I think that this is a legit Chicago team now, so I just want to give a shout out to them in that sense. Two through four is so dicey. I put the Cubs, and the reason I do that, look, you can make the case for the White Sox right now, and I wouldn't necessarily hate it for this upcoming season, because I don't think pitching is going to be I think it's just going to be a mess this year with how pitchers have been thrown out of their groove. But the reason I put the Cubs here instead of the White Sox is just because they haven't made the playoffs since I stopped listening to My Chemical Romance. So I think I'm just going to, I'm going to leave them outside of the top two, but I think the Cubs could bounce back as well from last season. And I think the offense is going to be great too. So I think some people are sleeping on the Cubs. So that's what my top two. I did put the White Sox at number four. Because, I mean, again, there's a lot of buzz on them heading into the season. And, you know, they actually have, like, a face to the franchise a little bit in Tim Anderson. I'm, like, kind of leading the charge with the modern baseball movement. I guess that is a weird criteria for this to throw that in there, but I'm going to at number three. And then the Red Stars definitely have to be number four. I mean, they, like you said, Chris, they're coming off of a year where they made the finals, and I think they lost 4-0 if my, you know, me just glossing through the internet, if I – read that correctly. And Julie Ertz also is on that team. And like I think she won, what was it, U.S. Soccer National Player of the Year? Either it was last year or like 2 years before that. So I like the Red Stars over there. All these other Chicago teams are just a little bit miserable right now. So, I mean, it's the top four might be a little bit difficult, but everything's a toss up from here on in. Do you guys even want to do like the next four of, like, you want to just do 5 through 8?
Look, I mean, I could slot the Blackhawks into my number four because they made the playoffs, I guess.
You know? Yeah.
According to criteria that was set out.
Yeah, it was like it's like a just joint dumpster. Some of it's on fire, but like the Bulls are right over there on fire, but like the Bears don't know what they're doing. The Blackhawks, meh, and the Bandits might not play this season. So I feel like we don't need to.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the Fire might do something, but they've been kind of also ran, even when they had Bastian Schweinsteiger and their main goal scorer from a couple, I cannot remember his last name. He was a very electric player for the MLS, but they didn't really make any noise. So
yeah, I mean, I think they also just moved to a new venue too, which I think helps them a little bit, because that was a trek to get out all the way out there, where I forget exactly where they were. But
oh, Bridgeview. Well, it's great because the Red Stars are in Bridgeview, which you're right, it takes a long time to get to unless you take the shuttle from up north. Or if you I went there to a game from Bridgeport, you had to take a bus to the Orange Line, to a shuttle from the Orange Line at Midway, and then still walk across like a gigantic gravel parking lot to get to the stadium. That's one of the last Mayor Daley deals, and it's probably the second worst thing he did outside of the parking meters.
Yeah.
But it's still a better place to play soccer than Soldier Field.
Yeah. I've only seen soccer. That's a lie. I've been to Toyota Park or whatever it's called these days. I've been there a few times, but it's just Soldier Field is central. It's more central for most of the city. It is difficult. I live in Uptown, and it is easily an hour to an hour and 10 minutes to get to that place in Bridgeview.
Yeah.
You don't know what traffic on 55 is going to be, but you know the traffic on Harlem is going to be terrible.
Yep.
So it's such a pain to get to. And you're right, taking a shuttle from somewhere on the north side, usually a bar, is usually the best way to go. But then, like, if you do that, then it's like a day of drinking. And I'm not against that. I'm not against that. I want to be clear. But I don't always need all that, you know? Sometimes I just want to go watch a game.
Yeah, and it's like, again, going back to my point about this is like the Sky being a real Chicago team now that they're not all the way out having to go to like Allstate Arena. Like, are you really a part of Chicago if you have to like have like an adventure to get all the way to a stadium to watch your sports team? Like, I don't know. That just feels like there's a little bit of a disconnect there when you have to do something like that. And I don't know. I feel like you're a Chicago sports team when you can just take the L, whatever line you take. Like, if you can take, you know, the train to get there, that's a Chicago sports team.
It's so easy to get to Wintrust. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Whenever I've heard people who used to live in suburbs near where the Sky used to play that have complained about it. I'm like, well, then you're just a jerk.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get there for most of the city. It's right off 55. It's right off Lakeshore Drive. It's not too far from the Dan Ryan. Like, it's so easy to get to. So anybody complains about it, send them to me.
Yeah. I'm holding you to that, Maggie.
It's like a really nice byproduct because that whole area was so the talk around it, and I know, Maggie, you know this being plugged in as a media person, with the TIF funds and how that whole thing went down with Rahm Emanuel. I remember people who were like slightly plugged, who were slightly into city politics, were not happy about that at all. But it's honestly, it's been pretty good for that neighborhood, and I don't see people getting pushed out as much.
Yeah,
it seems like there's an actual melding of the residents of the South Loop, Motor Row, Bronzeville area with that slowly creeping further south loop. You know, the 78 project aside, it seems like it's been really good. But also, we're really spoiled in Chicago with our locations of everything. Like,
we really
O'Hare. O'Hare is far to get to, but Midway's in the city. The Cubs and the White Sox both play within the city limits. The Bears are right downtown. The Bulls are in the city. Blackhawks in the same spot. I mean, I didn't realize it until I went to see games in other places or went to airports in other places. Like, if you go to Denver, just to get to the airport,
you're
nowhere near Denver. You can't even see Denver from there. And I think it's the same for Mile High Stadium. Like, Coors Field is in the city, but.
And yeah, I mean, most teams are that way. You go to Miami, it's terrible. Philadelphia, like, all of their teams are together, but they're like, way it's a long I think they call it the metro there, like
the SEPTA.
So we are very lucky that we have the setup we have in Chicago. We are spoiled, and people complain about nothing here.
Well, one of my friends who lives in Washington DC right now, I've been ever since I started covering the WNBA, I've been trying to get him to watch it. He loves basketball and he's open to it. But he said that when he looked at the directions for like what it would take to get to a Mystics game, that it would cost him more than the ticket itself. And that to him, that was a deal breaker. And I don't blame him, but those are some of the things.
It's a weird thought. I lived there.
It's odd.
And never figured it out.
I was there last year. I went for my birthday to watch a White Sox Nationals, and the Mystics played the Sky on my birthday the day before, and I didn't realize it until I got in town. And I was like, well, maybe I should go to this game. And it wouldn't have been too hard to get there, but it is expensive. There's no 25-cent transfer on the U trains or the trains out in DC. But to get to the new arena is not arduous.
Okay.
But it definitely would have cost. Also, the Mystics blew the Sky out that game, so I'm kind of happy I didn't go.
Oh, Maggie, did you just say something? It just sounded like it broke up.
Oh, I just said, it was that game.
Oh.
Yeah, you know the game. It wasn't the final game of the season, but it was the one in June. Oh, man.
Well, we're only a few days away from the Sky gearing up on, what was it? It's July 26, I believe, against the Aces. I'm so excited for it. Maggie, before we let you go, give us one prediction for the opener. Do you see the Sky winning versus the Aces on that Sunday?
I do. And hopefully Derica Hamby won't be up for any of their last-minute tricks. But, I mean, the Aces are not the same team this season because Liz Cambage isn't playing. And Kelsey Plum tore her Achilles?
Yeah, really unfortunate.
Yeah, so unfortunately, it's not going to be quite the rematch what I think we were all hoping to see, because the Aces' best players won't be out there. But I do think the Sky will take this one because I think they just seem so like ready and wanting to be out there.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think Asia Wilson, I think it will. Bill Laimbeer said today he is cautiously optimistic about her playing on Sunday, so there's a chance that the Aces might not even be with Asia. So that would be, it would be another blow to that team. But I think the Sky really, I just hope they open up the season in a big way to show, you know, I think we'll learn a lot in that first game and not necessarily what will it mean for the rest of the season, but just to see where everyone's at right now. But
yeah.
Chris, do you want to give a prediction before we wrap this up?
I'm going the same way. I think the Sky take that one. It'll be a big game, a nice game for the fans especially, and no matter what the Sky players say, I know that they're looking at that game from the way that the season ended. I think Steph was pretty honest about how everybody feels about it in terms of, quote-unquote revenge. But just missing players like Liz, who had such an incredible stat line in that playoff game, and Kelsey Plum, who was really coming into her own the last 10 games of the season after that performance against Los Angeles, it's you really can't say how much that team will miss those two players alone. And if they don't have Asia Wilson, who is an MVP caliber player when she gets everything going, and it's only, what, her second season now? Her third?
Third season, yeah.
It's if they're missing Asia Wilson, I don't see a way the Sky lose that game unless they make every possible mistake.
Yeah, I can't. If Asia Wilson doesn't play, I can't imagine the Sky losing that one. But Maggie, thank you so much for joining us. This was so fun, and I'm so glad we got a chance to talk about the Sky before the season starts. I'm bummed that we all won't be able to get together on Press Row, but I'm glad that you'll be reporting on this team this season, and we look forward to your content.
Well, thank you so much. This was a blast. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Maggie. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. If you want to contact me or Chris, you can always do so by emailing our mailbag, which is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, send us a DM at the handle @skyhookin, which is SKYHOOKIN. And we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review the show. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play. And we're also a part of the Winsider Podcast Network. You can find that on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And yeah, thanks to Maggie for joining us on the podcast and for you for joining us on this edition of the show. Until next time.